Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Richard, today we're going to wrap up 2 weeks. We've been talking about the school shooting in Parkland on February 14th. We've been talking about that for the last couple of weeks, actually. Mm-hmm. Not specifically about that school shooting, but about the relationship between gun violence and mental illness and gun violence and gun control and gun violence and safety and all these different aspects. And this week especially, we've been talking about mental illness and the relationship between mental illness and violence. But today we're going to work to kind of wrap things up a little bit and just kind of talk about the current state of affairs as it relates to gun control and where we are.
Yeah, originally we had talked about just doing a week.
Right.
Well, then the news kept happening.
Right.
And we didn't anticipate that. I don't think anybody did. The news kept happening. You had things like the student protests. You have companies changing their relationship with the NRA, eliminating discounts for ARA members, and then the reaction to that. And so the news keeps happening every day. So we decided to do a second week focusing on. But it's a time to sort of see where we are, wrap this up. We may revisit some parts of this as we go along, because I'm sure this story is going to continue to unfold over the next couple of weeks. So we may revisit it. But I think it's a good time to sort of pull everything together, see where we are, and where we need to go from here.
Yeah, so we're gonna pull a lot of this from an article from Vox, V-O-X, and it's entitled "We Aren't Having an Evidence-Based Discussion on Our Debate about Guns."
And that's the central issue, you know, that with all the clamor, the cacophony, they call it, with all the noise surrounding this debate, the extreme positions surrounding the debate, we're losing the solution. And the solution is somewhere in the middle, which we talked about over the last 2 weeks. And we need more information. If we're going to make effective decisions, we need to have more information, and we need to have good data on which to base those decisions.
And it is challenging given how quickly and sort of unexpectedly information is coming out about some of this, because, you know, I was, as we sit here recording today, you know, I was on my way into the office this morning and was listening to a report where, you know, President Trump recently gave a spontaneous speech talking about gun safety and gun control, and actually said a lot of things that were counter to other things that he has said and other things that people in the Republican Party have said. And so what does that mean? So, you know, it's difficult because it is a very organic.
It really is shifting. The you can feel it. You can feel people's positions shifting each day a little bit.
Right.
You know, so it's hard to know where it will end up.
Yeah. So we're recording this on Friday morning, March 2nd, and who knows what it will be like by the time this is what will be happening by the time this is posted tomorrow morning on March 3rd.
That's right. So by the time this comes out, it won't be old news. What we're going to talk about today will be good news. It will be worthwhile news.
Yeah.
For hearing this. So.
Hope so.
Yeah.
So, all right. So we've talked about these different issues, and we've talked about how difficult it is to predict the unpredictable. That was yesterday's podcast. And it is exceedingly difficult to predict things. And I think that, you know, because this is intimidating times, because, you know, here in our very locally in our small town, you know, we've had students arrested and within the past couple of days. Had students arrested and expelled from schools because of making statements, and we've had schools being monitored and mm-hmm. populated by police officers, right. armed guards, already. Armed officers.
Right.
Right. So it's...
The solutions are preceding the studies.
Right.
You know, which is always a bit of a danger. But
right.
everybody wants to do something right. about this. But what do we do?
Now, so there are some reasons, I think, that some of this is happening. And one of the reasons is the student protests. Because this is new to this mm-hmm.
right.
event.
Yeah, there are really seven key issues that we want right. to talk about this morning that we think are related to this whole
right.
to this issue of how do we prevent these shootings. And the first one are these student protests.
Right.
I mean, I was surprised. I think everybody's been surprised.
Right.
I think everybody's been surprised that the students are protesting mm-hmm. because this is the generation that isn't supposed to care about anything.
Right.
Okay, that, number one. Number two, the effect that it's had.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these students challenged Marco Rubio, President Trump. They're they're going right to the lawmakers.
Very confrontationally.
And saying, this has to change. Mm-hmm. You have to do something. And this whole phenomenon of young people challenging adults and saying, look, you're the people who are supposed to be doing something
right.
about this, and you're not. It's time to do something about
right.
it.
And the thing, what I think is fascinating, mm-hmm. is that one of the things that we often criticize young people about, social media,
right.
things like that,
mm-hmm.
is exactly the tool that they're using to keep this
right.
fire burning.
That's right. They're using their tools
mm-hmm.
Quite effectively. Now, the interesting part of this is we have, these students now are being challenged
mm-hmm.
by the adults. The adults right. are pushing. Who are the adults pushing back? Well, superintendents and principals.
Mm-hmm.
School authorities are saying if they're threatening punishments
mm-hmm.
if students leave school or mm-hmm. protest in school. Well, the interesting irony of that is that while gun advocates say we have to protect our Second Amendment rights, by limiting
right.
student voices, the adults now are running into First Amendment
right.
Restrictions
mm-hmm.
because the Supreme Court back in 2012, I think, or 2016, has consistently said that you don't shed your First Amendment rights when you walk through the school doors.
Right.
Just because you enter a school, you don't shed your First Amendment rights.
Right.
There was a case, Tinker versus Des Moines, and it's been year after year, case after case has said, no, Tinker versus Des Moines, a girl, a 13-year-old girl wanted to wear an armband to protest some war. And the school said, no, she couldn't do it. And the Supreme Court said, no, she can do it.
Mm-hmm.
That is a First Amendment right that no school is allowed to limit. There's a famous, the one that's being publicized with this recent debate is Curtis Rhodes, who is the superintendent of schools
right.
in a little town, Needville, Texas, right outside of Houston. And he has made an announcement. He sent the announcement to parents and students that if you engage in any way in these protests, that you'll be suspended for 3 days and
mm-hmm.
all the consequences that go with suspension.
Right.
And I'm guessing what he's talking about is you get zeros for everything you miss. Well, the Supreme Court's waited on that one too, and that would be double jeopardy. You can't
mm-hmm.
be punished twice for
mm-hmm.
the same. You can't be suspended and get zeros. So the school districts are running into First Amendment
right.
Problems by trying to restrict student protests.
And I think that there's such an interesting polarity to
right.
this, because on one hand you have that, and I've heard about high schools here in our town,
in our area,
again,
right. mm-hmm.
where the principals or the administration has reportedly told the students that if you
mm-hmm.
protest,
mm-hmm.
if you walk out, you'll be suspended. And
right.
so, you know, that story was in Texas with Curtis
mm-hmm.
Rhodes, but they're even here in our small town. On the other end of that, we have, I saw a great video that was posted on my Facebook, or it came up on my Facebook wall,
mm-hmm.
Where a friend of mine who's a school psychologist over in our neighboring county of Hillsborough County,
mm-hmm.
And it was a news helicopter that was filming students at a local high school doing
right.
the protest and walking out during lunch. And the school psychologist had posted it, and he said, "That's me holding the gate open." And you know, he was talking about how he was working to, you know, make sure that the students knew how to be safe and you know, what they needed to do and everything. And, you know, and he was talking about how good it was and how happy it made him that the students were standing up for something so important. So you have this fascinating dichotomy between, you know, one group trying to restrict this and then the other group who is encouraging it and you know, hoping that it becomes a good platform.
Right. And for each of these things, you again see these the dichotomy between those who are in favor of some kind of control and those who are opposed, and those who are opposed to trying to limit the students. But just, you know, the next thing that will happen is we'll hear about, well, these are street thugs and they're coming out, you know, creating. No, these are not street thugs. In fact, the Harvard Medical School and the School of Public Health at Harvard has banned, those two schools have banded together. In fact, they've published a photo, there are 100 of them or so, who are also saying, we have to do something. Right. And what they're suggesting, and I like the idea, is that we treat gun violence the way we treat any other violence and treat it as a public health issue, like we did with cigarettes or driving or flying or whatever else. Let's not put guns in a separate category.
Right.
There's no need to.
Right.
And let's make it a public health issue so that we can study it as a public health issue. So these are not, you know, this time the protesters can't be accused of being street thugs and outside influences and communists and socialists. These are thoughtful and concerned citizens. So that debate should occur. So I'm glad to see the protest.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, you know, as this movement continues, you know, I'm hoping that we will continue to see this passion.
That's right. The passion has to continue.
What I do hope as well, though, is that the students remain appropriate with it. Because, you know, what I can imagine happening is that, you know, some of the students start getting a little bit too, I don't want to use the word boisterous because that makes it seem so juvenile, but that they become too confrontational.
Right.
And that they become so confrontational that the adults begin to see them as, you know,
and then they're going to get dismissed.
Right.
Okay, as thugs. Okay. And they're not thugs. This is the democracy is messy.
Right.
Okay. And these kind of protests have occurred throughout our country's history.
Right.
And so the worst thing that could happen is that the student, the energy that the student protests have brought and the attention it's brought and the change that's already occurring in the debate in state legislatures and at the federal government, that energy has to continue because if it doesn't, then the special interests will again take over.
Right.
And that we don't want to have happen.
Now, the next two points that we're going to talk about, interestingly enough, have to do with some of those special interests.
That's right. And the second one is this whole issue of discounts.
Right.
Where certain companies have come out and said, I think there are two things. One is some companies have said, we're going to end the discounts.
Right.
We're not terminating our relationship with the NRA. We're just not going to offer them discounts anymore.
Right.
Because when a person like Wayne LaPierre gets up and talks about, you know, everybody should have a gun and we should arm everybody and a good guy and all that stuff, if he's not, all that these companies are saying is we don't agree with that portion of the NRA.
Right.
Not the NRA in total. It's that extreme position of the NRA. So we're just not going to offer discounts.
Right.
Other stores, some other companies, Dick's and Walmart, have said they're not selling assault rifles or large capacity magazines anymore.
And they're limiting the age. You have to be at least 21 to purchase.
Right. And you can't buy assault, you can't buy military style assault rifle. You can buy hunting rifles and pistols and all. You can't buy assault type weapons at our stores. So what happens? Again, you get these extremes. Now the Georgia, I think of how long it takes to make a law.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
It takes months or years because it grinds very slowly. State legislatures, federal government, notoriously slow.
I heard once that there's that the that legislation has two speeds. Glacial and lightning.
Right, right.
Well, here's lightning.
This is lightning. So we know that it typically takes an enormously long time to get anything through a legislature. A lot of bickering and a lot of horse trading and dealing and compromise. Delta is the largest, the busiest airport in the world is Hartsfield in Atlanta.
Okay.
It is because of Delta.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Delta is this huge, they employ like 30,000 people or something. It's a huge economic driver of, mm-hmm. of the whole state,
right.
But particularly the city of Atlanta. So Delta announced, I think on Tuesday, that it was going to end its discounts to NRA members.
Mm-hmm.
On Thursday,
2 days
like
later,
30 hours later, the Georgia legislature passed a law taking away some tax-exempt status on jet fuel, mm-hmm. which is going to cost Delta Airlines a loss of about $50 million a year, somewhere between $38 and $50 million a year, because they want to punish Delta for taking the position that they took.
Yeah.
So they can get that law, and this is a Republican-controlled legislature with very conservative mm-hmm. roots, they can pass that law within 24 or 48 hours to punish a company mm-hmm. for taking this position, and other legislation, health issues,
right.
children's issues,
yeah.
educational issues, languish for years.
Mm-hmm.
But this they can get through. So again, you see the politicization.
Mm-hmm.
What is the word? Politization? I don't know. You see how it gets politicized.
Ooh,
when you have these two extreme groups.
Right.
Okay, so
yeah.
here's Delta making a statement. They're not saying, they're not banning the NRA. They're not
right.
banning us all. They're not asking. They're just saying, we're not going to offer these discounts. It's a gesture. It's
mm-hmm.
a gesture to say, yes, we are concerned.
Right.
And I think what everybody's concerned about is the extreme position of the NRA, that everybody should be able to get anything they want.
Right.
And that, I think, is what
And that's what we've been talking about over the past 2 weeks, is
right.
that you can't root yourself in mm-hmm. either extreme.
Right.
Because when you do that, what we've been concerned about is that you alienate
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Different people.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I love is that some of these companies are saying, okay, we can't go to those extremes.
Right.
I mean, Walmart and Dick's Sporting Goods, they're not saying we're not going to sell guns anymore.
Exactly.
They're saying we're going to put some boundaries
in
this.
What we think are sensible
right.
limits on,
right.
on guns. And
so they're not at one extreme or the other extreme. They're just
right.
finding the appropriate middle ground.
Mm-hmm. And the third issue we want to discuss, and we would be remiss if we didn't, is the NRA itself.
Right.
Okay. It's the lightning rod
mm-hmm.
in this whole thing. And I think what companies are saying and what most individuals are saying is nobody, I guess some people are opposed to hunting as a matter of principle. We're not talking about the hunters.
Right.
We're talking about the extreme wing
right.
of the NRA. And I think that's what everybody's saying, is that we're not opposed to the entire organization.
Right.
You and I have talked many times. Our families are members.
Right.
We had guns in our house all the while.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, I think you said this last week, everybody I knew growing up
mm-hmm.
had guns,
right.
Hunting rifles or something. They're just a part of your life at that time
right.
and where we lived.
Yeah.
I mean, people hunted. We lived in a rural area. And it was just a part of our life, and we never thought about it.
Well, and I mentioned last week, I think I said that I think that everyone I know owns a gun.
Right. Right.
I have since learned that there are two people that I know that don't own a gun.
Really?
Otherwise,
everyone
I know owns a gun. So, absolutely. And you know, we see reports over and over again that people, you know, the vast majority of NRA members,
right.
you
mm-hmm.
know, they are... They want good,
That's right.
appropriate gun laws and,
right.
and rules and regulations with it, because they know that, you know, that owning a gun is an important right and important privilege,
right.
and they want it protected and they want it governed mm-hmm. appropriately,
right.
not over-governed, not,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
not where somebody's coming in and, you know, checking it, that, you know, all that
right.
kind of stuff, but... They want it to be appropriately mm-hmm. managed so that, you know, so that things don't happen where this kind of debate comes up once again
right.
and they're at risk of anything with their
right.
rights.
And I think what we're talking about here is that people who don't want any guns
mm-hmm.
are going to have to compromise because there
yeah.
are going to be guns.
Yeah.
People who want every gun are going to have to compromise because every... So there's some position between what Wayne LaPierre and Dana Loesch are saying, where we should arm everybody, and we should arm nobody.
Okay? Right.
Somewhere between those two right. extreme positions, and that's all we're saying. So I would like, and I think many of us would like, for the NRA as an organization, nobody's opposed to the NRA.
Right.
What we're opposed are to these extreme positions mm-hmm. that the NRA is taking, and they're forcing legislators to pass inappropriate legislation.
Right.
You know, I would like for the NRA to say to the Georgia legislature, hey, look, guys, back off. We agree,
right.
okay? As an organization, we agree with what Delta is doing. We'd like to have that back. But if it means we have to give in a little bit, we're willing to give in. So don't punish them because
right.
you're out of step with what most of us want.
Right, and that's the point. The point of, you know, it seems to me at least,
right.
the point of lobbying and doing that is to negotiate.
That's right.
Is to figure out, you know, I mean, any teenager knows that, you know, if you want this much,
right.
You ask. You may start with this much
right.
and work your way down. I mean, that's right. the way that negotiations work.
Exactly.
And so if you want to start out with mm-hmm. everybody owns a gun, but then say, we'll work with you.
Right.
Okay, let's not do this one. Let's not do that one.
Right.
And work your way to a compromise.
Right.
That's mm-hmm. the way that things should be.
And I would love to see the vast majority of NRA members mm-hmm. to stand up and say, wait a minute, we are willing... We do want some reasonable
right.
compromise here. Most of us, I would bet that most NRA members mm-hmm. don't own assault rifles.
Right.
That's not why they own guns.
Right.
They own guns to hunt or collect.
I was going to say, even if they do, mm-hmm. it's a collection
right.
thing. It's not a, right. you know, they're not...
They don't plan to use it.
Right.
They might go out and shoot it once in a while.
Right.
But
right.
They're
yeah.
collectors,
mm-hmm.
and so they want that in their collection.
Right.
But... No, I think the NRA needs to step forward. The vast majority of its members need to step forward and say, hey, we're really reasonable and we want to be
right.
reasonable. Get Wayne LaPierre, get the extremists out, because that's what's giving the NRA a bad reputation.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah, well, it's digging your feet in.
Right.
Right. Now, the next point, the next issue mm-hmm. is the point that we began this whole discussion
right.
on 2 weeks ago. And that is
gun control
itself.
Right. That's
mm-hmm. Now this is where we're seeing a lot of shifts.
Yes.
Because
I think that's where we're seeing the most shift.
Right.
Right.
Because you know there are days when we hear that we're not talking about gun control. It's off the table.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, it's a mental illness thing.
Right.
Which is going to be the next one that we talk about.
Right.
But. Then you get reports that says, no, we need gun control.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of what I heard on the way in this morning that,
right.
you know, President Trump talked about sensible gun control. And,
mm-hmm.
and it's difficult to wrap your head around what's happening, because what we're primarily hearing from are the politicians.
Right.
But what do we know about what the general population wants?
Mm-hmm.
And the general population, the majority of the general population,
almost 70%.
Right.
It's in the high 60s, about 67, 68% of Americans want some type of gun control.
Right.
They're not sure what it is. Nobody's willing to. We're not ready to articulate what kind of, but everybody recognizes the need for some kind of control.
And speaking of that, this just jumped into my head, and I just feel like I have to say it. Why is it that people get so upset when you say we need to talk about gun control
mm-hmm.
and they say, okay, well, what is the solution? You say, well, I don't have a solution
mm-hmm.
yet, but we need to talk about it. Well, you know, we can't talk about it if you don't have a solution.
Right.
Where does that come from?
I can tell we're going to get there at the end.
I know. It's just...
No, I'm going to talk about that at the end.
You're going to talk about it more?
I have a solution for
that. It makes me...
I know.
It's like...
No, there's...
Why can we only talk about things if we have a solution to them?
Right.
If we have a solution to them, we don't even have to talk about it.
Right. Yeah, we're going to talk about that at the end.
Oh.
Yeah.
So
most citizens...
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the Georgia legislature, I think, is, again, this extreme position.
Right.
Because I think most people in Georgia probably are in agreement in
mm-hmm.
some way, and they do want some kind of gun control. And if NRA mm-hmm. is going to fight gun control, then NRA is in this extreme position.
Right.
So I think the citizens of Georgia don't agree with the conservative lawmakers
right.
in Georgia.
Yeah.
The other thing that's interesting is President Trump, is touting this idea of we need a military parade like they have in China, Russia, and third world countries, where they tout their, you know, North Korea has these military parades, and Trump thinks it's a great idea to have a military parade. And 61% of Americans are opposed to a military parade and the $80 million that it's going to cost. Things aren't free, okay? Mm-hmm. People have to be paid. So it's an $80 million parade because Donald Trump thinks it's a good idea. 61% of Americans are opposed to that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. We don't want to glorify our military might. We don't want to glorify guns, okay? So I think clearly the vast majority of Americans want some kind of gun control. You know, there was an interesting, in Australia, there was a mass shooting years ago, and they had, because of the mass shootings, had very strict gun control. Mm-hmm. They haven't had a mass shooting since. That's one country.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some evidence there that restricting access to guns might reduce these mass shootings.
Yeah.
It did in Australia. Let's at least try it. I mean, let's at least talk about it. Let's have a discussion.
Right.
Well, I don't know what the conclusion. I don't know what the decision will be. But let's at least have a discussion.
Yeah.
Okay. Then we get on to.
Then we get back to mental
illness. The other big issue,
right?
Because we've been talking. Most of the news is about gun control and mental illness this week, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as we've talked about throughout this past week,
right?
Attempting to point the finger primarily at mental illness is fruitless at its best, because it's not going to lead us to the place that we think that we're going to go.
It's not
going to
buy us anything.
Because when most people think of mental illness, they have a very specific idea, I think, of what they're talking about. And the problem is that idea that they're talking about is an extremely small portion of the population of people with mental illness.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we spent a lot of time this week talking about the numbers,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
If there's 320 million people in the United States and 20% of people have mental illness, that's a little over 60 million people.
Right.
I'm sorry, but there is not going to be any legislator who's going to sign off on a bill that would limit 60 million people from being able to exercise their Second Amendment.
And again, you could, okay, so it's not 20 million. Well, let's go down to 10 million. Let's go down to 10%.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take half of the people with mental, okay?
30 million.
Now we're talking about 30 million, okay? If we go down to 1%, we're still talking about 3.2 million,
right?
Okay? If we go down to a half a percent, it's still over a million. A quarter of a percent, 0.25, is still hundreds of thousands of people. And hundreds of thousands of people don't pose the risk.
Well, and even if we did that,
right?
Even if, and we said a half of a half of a half of a percent.
I don't care how far you slice it.
Okay, so we're talking about, even if we were able to figure out a way to break it down to a few thousand people that we should restrict guns from. There were only
400.
There were about 400 shootings last year.
Last year, right.
Okay, so that means that even if you could whittle it down to the 3,000 people that are at greatest risk.
Right.
And so 3,000 of the 300 million, I mean, you're talking about 0.0001% or so.
Right.
If you were able to whittle it down that closely
to 3,000, right,
you're still talking about 2,600 people you would restrict guns from that would never have been
that you wouldn't have to. So it's 2,500 people that you mislabel,
right?
Okay, and take away their rights.
Right.
Now, whether you agree or disagree with Second Amendment rights, let's forget about the Second Amendment. There are nine others.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to limit their rights?
Yeah.
Okay. Should we take free speech away from them? Should we take freedom? Okay. Even if you don't agree with the Second Amendment, there are nine others.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to take away the Second,
right,
take away any.
Right.
And nobody,
you
don't want to do that.
Right.
Okay.
Because then you get into the position, you're right, that, well, they have mental illness, and so we shouldn't just let them have any form that they want to speak on.
That's right.
You know, there are plenty of people with radio programs and YouTube channels and things like that that tout very scary
draconian
things. And, you know, it's their freedom of speech. And so they're allowed to do that. And they, right. they and
freedom of assembly, freedom of speech.
Right.
Right.
So we can't start down that slippery slope. Yeah.
And we said, well, we didn't mention, we mentioned this the other day, that as a psychologist, I could come up with a way and say to you, I can do this with 99% accuracy, that would be very appealing to you, mm-hmm. until I showed you the numbers. And then right. you say, well, wait a minute, we can't do that.
Right.
So it sounds great, but it's not.
Right.
Okay, so this isn't a mental health issue.
Right.
There are mental illness is one of the things that we need to discuss, but it's not that simple.
Right.
The other issue with mental illness, there was an article in the LA Times recently that said only 1/3 of the shooters
right.
had accessed mental health services.
Right.
All I can say is, duh, like my kids say, duh. Mm-hmm. We don't have mental health services in this right. country. Unless you have a Cadillac insurance policy, you don't have mental health coverage.
Right.
If you do have mental health coverage, you have a high copay. Mm-hmm. You probably don't have mental health coverage. If you don't have really good insurance, many people don't have any insurance.
Right.
Okay. I don't like the word Obamacare. The Affordable Care Act tried to change that, but of course, that's been sent to the trash heap of history. So we don't have sufficient mental health right. care. There's no way to we don't provide mental health care.
Right.
Number one, people don't access it because there's still a stigma. Well, I don't want to go get mental health right. care because then it's going to go on my record and I won't be able to do right. this, that, and the other thing. And
well, I don't want to go get mental health care because that's going to, then if I do that, then I won't be able to have a gun.
I won't be able to get a job. I won't be able to do this. You know, right. every time you fill out a job application, one of the questions is, have you ever been to a mental health professional?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's still on most job applications. And people don't want that stigma, because it is a stigma, attached to them. And so, no, people aren't accessing it. And the people who need it the most, the people who need mental health care the most, are the least likely to receive it. And in most communities, mental health care is done by mental health agencies that are underfunded, understaffed, and undertrained.
Right.
And everybody in mental health care knows that. If you have lots of disposable income, mm-hmm. or an extraordinarily good insurance policy, you can access good medical care, good psychiatric care, but you're going to pay $200 to $300 an hour for it. And most people can't afford that.
Right.
So you go to other places that don't have good health care.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So no, we have a mental health crisis in this country,
right.
but it's not because the mentally ill are committing mass shootings. It's because we have inadequate mental health services.
Right.
Okay. So that's another discussion that needs to occur.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So,
you were up on a soapbox there.
Well, you know, every once in a while I get on one. However, speaking of predicting,
the next one is predicting.
Right. We had fun with this
yesterday. Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
That was sort of the bottom line that we got to yesterday. You can't predict the unpredictable. You can't predict. Human behavior is so complex.
That's right.
Whether it's, you know, biology, it's experience, it's intrinsic drive, it's right. subconscious or unconscious motivators.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many factors involved, some of which that we're cognizant of and some of which that we're not, that influence human behavior.
Right.
It's so difficult to predict,
right.
if not impossible.
Yeah, we talked about...
Absolutely predict.
We talked about predicting the weather,
right.
which is a little simpler because we have models and we've been studying it for years, mm-hmm. and we have data. We've been allowed to study the weather, unlike gun control. We're allowed to study the weather. And even with all that work, we can barely predict the weather.
Mm-hmm.
Human behavior is infinitely more complex than the weather,
right.
and it's going to be infinitely more difficult to predict it. But what do we need in order to get better predictive models? We need research.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Why don't we have that research?
Lots of reasons.
Because of the Dickey Amendment.
We're not allowed.
We're not allowed to do that research.
Right.
Let's go back to the NRA, that extreme, you know, we talked about the NRA, the third item that we presented this morning. We talked about the NRA. This is a time for the NRA to stand up mm-hmm. and say, and to agree with Congressman Dickey. Dickey died in April last year, Mm-hmm. This Dickey Amendment was in 1996. And what the Dickey Amendment said, the head of the CDC, Center for Disease Control, Rosenberg, I think his name, Mark Rosenberg, got up and said, you know, we really ought to treat guns as a public health issue, mm-hmm. and study it like we study vehicular accidents and plane accidents. And, you know, every time there's a plane crash, the FAA comes in and they do this analysis. And over time, we've learned mm-hmm. how to make flying more safer and right. how to make driving safer. You don't remember the Corvair, do you?
No, I do.
You do?
I think so.
You probably studied it in history class.
Yeah.
Ralph Nader, and you know, so there were cars that were built that were very dangerous, mm-hmm. and we learned that through doing research. Well, in 1996, Dickey, a legislator from Arkansas, put the CDC on notice that the funding for research, any research that advocated gun control, would not be funded. Mm-hmm. They removed right. all those, like $20 million or something. Any effort to study gun control was defunded. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so from 1996 to 2012, I believe, funding for gun research, gun violence research, dropped 96%. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the Dickey Amendment made it impossible to study gun control. So we don't have a good understanding. You mentioned earlier, it bothers you that we don't study things because we don't have any proof that it does any good.
Right.
Okay. Well, there's no evidence. Those who are opposed to gun control will say, well, there's no evidence that guns really do this. Mm-hmm. You're right. There isn't, because you're not allowed to study it.
Right.
Okay. So you get that yeah. circuitous argument that you say, well, there's no evidence that it... Well, of course there's no evidence, because since 1996, we haven't been allowed to provide any evidence.
Right.
Okay. There's nobody doing that. Well, they're trying to do it, but mm-hmm. it's just a drop in a bucket. To give you some indication, the federal government spends $21 million studying headaches. Mm-hmm. They spend $2 million studying gun violence. Mm-hmm. We just don't have there's no money for research.
Right.
And it does take money to do that kind of research. Right. I mean, people aren't going to do it for free.
Right.
So it takes money to do the research. But no, we don't have any proof, because we haven't been allowed to collect it since 1996.
Right.
Interesting. Tidbit of history.
All right.
You're going to love this. As I said, Dickey died in April of 2017. In 2012, mm-hmm. Dickey and Rosenberg wrote an article mm-hmm. together. They co-authored an article seeking more gun control, more research on gun control. Mm-hmm. And I thought, one of the great ironies of history. So we're living under the Dickey Amendment, mm-hmm. and yet he and Rosenberg got together right. like 8 years, 10 years later, and wrote an article advocating we need more research about gun violence. And before he died, Dickey said he apologized. And he apologized. He said, I wished I had been a little less reactionary.
Right.
Because this whole idea of not studying gun violence has not been such a good idea.
Right. So. Yeah. So even the person who said... Right. pioneered the movement to disallow such mm-hmm. research, mm-hmm. so that this research is needed. So we have to.
Yeah,
I think this is at the root of the issue: is that we make claims,
right.
we make policy, we make we create opinions, but they're not rooted in any fact. They're That's not right. rooted in any research or anything that we know to be certain, and so. I was seeing a patient yesterday, and we were talking about different things. And this kid, he's an extremely bright kid, but what he does is he will, if he has an opinion of something, he is mm-hmm. firmly in that opinion. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about how inflexible we become when we don't. Yeah. We don't really have the facts about things,
right.
and we're just going based upon belief and fear.
Right.
When we use those two emotions as our primary motivator for any type of opinion, mm-hmm. we really restrict ourselves from the idea that we may be wrong.
That's right.
Or that there may be other ideas that are just as valid.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to be able to do research. We've talked about this with marijuana. We've talked about this with guns.
Right.
We've talked about this with lots of other things.
That's true.
We're so fearful mm-hmm. of some of these things. And there were people with such adamant opinions for right. or against these things. Let us do the research. Let the research happen.
Let's have the research. Let's do the studies. Let's study. You know, we have something called the, I didn't know the name of it. It's called the Fatality Analysis Reporting System that we use to study car crashes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And over time, all those data that we collect on car have made cars safer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, disc brakes and mm-hmm. backup systems and self drive. I mean, all the improvements in cars have come from this vast
right.
research effort that we've been. All we're saying is, let's do the same thing with guns.
Right.
Why not? I mean,
right.
why in the world would you be opposed to doing the same kind of research on guns that we did on cigarettes?
Right.
There was a time when cigarettes were very sexy and it was the thing to do. Now, public opinion has changed. Yes, it's taken 40 years to do that.
Mm-hmm.
We could have the same change with guns.
Right.
I mean, we've done it with cigarettes, we've done it with alcohol, we've done it with cars, we've done it with airplanes. There's no reason why we shouldn't do
right.
the same kind of research with guns. Let's untie, let's open up, throw open the shutters, and let's give this problem, not just mass shootings, all shootings, about 30,000 gun deaths a year in our country.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to study not just mass shootings, but we need to study why are we having 30, you know, most of those are suicides.
Right.
What is the role that guns play? What is the role of mental illness? What is the role of the NRA? Let's get everybody together. Let's do the research. Let's have the discussions. Let's get rid of these extreme positions.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They have no place now.
Yeah. You have to believe that at some level that the hesitation, the resistance to do that study, those kinds of studies, is either financially driven.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Or it's maybe even fear driven.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We're worried about what the findings would be.
Right.
Because the worst thing in the world for some of these agencies and some of these people is for the research to come back and say, you know what, it is
the guns. You were wrong about that.
Yeah.
Right.
That would be the...
Yeah. One of the solutions that's been touted, and I think is an intervention that is being put into place, is arming teachers.
Right.
Okay. Now, do we know that arming teachers will reduce... Probably... We don't know. I mean,
right.
the point is you're implementing an intervention that you don't know whether it's going to work or not. Somebody made the comment that arming teachers will be good for gun sales. It may not be good for society.
Right.
Please don't implement any interventions until we know that it's going to result in have some positive impact.
Right. And the last kick to the horse that's not getting up is that we can't it's another way of saying beating a dead horse. Is that
I'm with you.
You can't research that.
No.
Okay, so you can't research prevention in that way, because let's say we get millions of dollars and we're going to do a study to see if arming teachers prevents a school shooting. All right. How many schools are there in a given district, school district,
right.
for goodness sakes? And what is the probability of a school shooting happening in any one of those schools? It's extremely small.
You know, we have over 100, I think we have, how many schools in Polk County?
I don't know.
About 100.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you arm 3 teachers in each one, just in this single county,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have 300 to 500
mm-hmm.
gun sales.
Right.
Just in this county.
Mm-hmm.
That's thousands, maybe tens of thousands of increased guns in the state of Florida.
Right.
That's just Florida.
Well, absolutely. But if we look at, and this is where my mind goes with it as far as the research goes, if you look at how many schools there are in Florida, I mean, mm-hmm. we're thousands of schools
yeah.
in Florida. How many school shootings have we had? One? Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you arm teachers in a random collection, random sample of schools throughout the state, and those schools have no school shootings,
it's been successful.
We will say that it's been successful, but at the same time, we have thousands of other schools that don't have school shootings that also had no teachers with guns.
Right. No, the teachers with guns is a bad, bad idea.
Researching relatively infrequent behaviors is extremely difficult unless you can create a scenario to elicit said behavior. And we don't want to elicit, a school shooting behavior.
That's right.
So it's exceedingly difficult to research. Yeah. And so you go out, and this will be what will happen, because we saw this with zero tolerance to some extent, but we also saw this with the major restrictions put on, when you go to fly somewhere, travel by plane. They say, it was a success because, look, we haven't had any planes taken over by terrorists since 9/11. Right. Well, how many planes did we have taken over by terrorists before 9/11?
None.
So...
Or, no, none taken over.
Yeah, so it's, it's like, I don't know, I don't even know what phrase to use for it, but it's just
I have no idea what it would cost. If let's say you want to arm 5 teachers in a school with 30 teachers. I don't know what the numbers would be. Let's say 5 teachers. Who buys the guns? Mm-hmm. Do teachers buy their own?
Right.
No. I mean, you can't ask a teacher to buy a gun. If
right.
Okay. So first of all, you have to buy the guns.
Well, they have to buy their pencil sharpeners and their crayon, their
now
other school supplies.
I have no idea.
They could ask their students. You could ask their students to chip in to
that's
pay
true.
For their...
No, you know what you could
that's
do?
That's what we do.
You could have candy sales.
That's true.
Right? You could sell candy bars.
You could say, here's your school item list.
Right.
Pencils, notebooks, 9mm.
No. You could ask the students to bring in ammunition, instead of bringing in scotch tape and toilet paper. You could say, could you bring in ask your parents for some ammunition?
This is morbid kidding.
Glock, right?
This is morbid kidding, but it's
no, it's black
it's
humor
scenario.
Because it's a stupid idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry. It's a stupid idea to arm teachers, okay? You're going to put guns in circuit. Let's do this. Teacher leaves school, goes to McDonald's. Mm-hmm. Guy comes in with a gun, starts shooting. Teacher starts shooting back. The police arrive. How do they know who the perpetrator is? Mm-hmm. That's what's happening to civilians with guns. Police walk into active shooters. They don't know who the bad guy is.
Right.
They see 3 people with guns. Which one do you shoot?
Right. Well, another scenario is, say you have a teacher with a gun. And there's a school shooting.
Right.
A shooter comes on campus. The teacher goes to confront the school shooter, fires at them, and hits another student.
Yeah. Then what's the liability? Let's not even talk about liability. Let's talk about that person living with that for the rest of your life.
Right.
How about if the school shooter comes in dressed like a teacher? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Police come in and say, guy says, oh, no, I'm a teacher. Mm-hmm. How will you know?
Right.
There are so many things that can go wrong with that. And it's so expensive. Instead of spending tens of millions of dollars, I'm sure it would be tens of millions of dollars. There are 50 million.
Because, not just for the guns, but for the training and
everything.
For everything else.
That's right. Tens of millions of dollars. Instead of doing that, why don't you spend that money for educational purposes? Mm-hmm. So everybody will benefit from it. You don't have money for education, but you have money for guns and it's just a stupid idea, President Trump. Don't do it. Okay, stop advocating it. It's a stupid idea.
Do you think it's a smart idea or a stupid idea?
I think it's a stupid idea. No, it is. It's stupid because we don't have the research to show that it's going to have any effect.
Right.
You're going to spend an enormous amount of money that you claim we don't have to do something of dubious results. So that's not what this debate needs.
Right.
Okay, so back off the solutions until we know which ones are more likely to work.
Right, absolutely. So, all right, do you have anything else on your list?
Oh, I have tons.
Tons.
No,
But we'll save those tons for another day.
We have much to do. And we're going to keep up with this story. I may come back. Yeah. You know, I'll be watching and reading and listening. Yeah. And if there are other issues that come up, or as they say in the news, as breaking stories occur.
Right. And we've been working with...
we'll send our reporters out to the scene.
Right. We've been working with one of our publishing companies, our test publishing companies, and we're looking at some different ways to explore the idea of violent risk assessments and things like that. So as we learn more about that and kind of refine some of those thoughts, we'll be sharing some of those things too. So,
that's right.
Because if we can figure out a way to assess, validly assess risk, then
there are some things, there are a few things that are beginning to percolate to the surface. You and I are continuing to do research on the topic. We're going to continue to do reviews and clinical research to see if we can identify what some of these issues are. And there are some what look like valuable issues that are rising to the surface that I think we ought to take a closer look at. We're going to be doing that over the next couple of weeks.
Right.
So we'll keep you up to date on those things.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that is it for today, for this week. We'll
love
be back
hear.
Next week. We're going to get into some other topics next week. But as you say, we'll kind of revisit this periodically as some things are happening and as we get more information about things.
We want to, maybe we don't, but I want to encourage students to keep your voices raised. You're absolutely right. You're on the right side of this issue, and you have every right to do what you're doing.
Yeah.
Continue it. The adults are listening for the first time, so keep up the good work.
Finally.
We support your efforts.
Absolutely. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid. Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We would be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning.